Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Music performed by our guest today, the Seraphim String Quartet. We just heard a lovely excerpt from the Danzas de Panama for String Quartet by William Grant Still. We heard something called Mejorana y Socavón, and this was something that was supposed to give the effect of folk guitars and an instrument called the Mejoraneras and a three-string violin called the Rabel. Still replicated that in this collection. We are delighted today to finally have the opportunity to speak with members of a wonderful ensemble, the Seraphim String Quartet. We spent a lot of time trying to make plans for this because they are so busy with their new release and making appearances and lots of success. So if that is the reason that we have to delay our interview, that's a very, very good one. So welcome all of you. WRTI. We have one member, I think, of the quartet. Kate Ransom is the original quartet. Is that right, Kate?
That's correct, yes.
And your first violin?
Well, we actually share the first and second violin parts, Lisa Vopel and I.
So now, has that always been done?
We have done that since the inception of Seraphim String Quartet.
Which was what year?
2001.
Okay, so it's it's been around for a while now. Mm-hmm. The time goes very, very fast. And then we have Larry, who is a cellist. Mm-hmm. And Larry, how long have you been with the Seraphim?
A while now. I joined in 2006 in the spring. So over 7 years now.
Over seven. Then we have Esme. You are, you're a violist?
I am, yes. And I always play viola, no matter what. And I joined a little over a year ago, last September.
Now, was that a joke, or is that really for sure?
That was an attempt, I hope.
Yeah, it because the viola is really, it looks kind of like a bigger violin, but it's absolutely totally different.
It's a very legitimate instrument.
And it's very annoying because you read, what clef do you read? It's the...
Alto clef.
The alto clef.
Sometimes treble, but in viola land we call treble clef terrible clef because it's more challenging for us.
Well, violists are very proud. I do know they're unique in their own field and have their opinions. So welcome. Welcome, Esme. And then Lisa, you are second violin, is that right?
Uh-huh. I share the duties with Kate. We rotate in and out of first and second violin.
I see. Not like the orchestra. The larger orchestras don't do that. So This is much more democratic, right?
Well, it really is. The spirit of it is. And, most quartets actually sit in fixed formation, but it's just been the philosophy of Seraphim from the outset to be egalitarian in that regard and many others.
Which is really lovely. I think you, not only is it fair, but it also puts I think in certain works you have, more challenging parts for different instruments. And when you rotate like that, it keeps you on top of your game. Isn't that right?
Definitely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Especially, it's an interesting perspective to switch back and forth to from the violin side of things because, being an inner voice and, being more aligned with the violist certainly changes your outlook.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, and then, of course, Larry, you read the bass clef?
Well, we actually have to be pretty versatile. We read the bass clef and the tenor clef, another one of those weird clefs, and then the treble clef sometimes. So
how do you read the treble? That's quite high, isn't it?
It can be, but sometimes it's just easier, I think, from a publishing standpoint for them to write music that doesn't have so many ledger lines getting up there in the stratosphere.
You're right, yeah. But I've always, you know, been exceedingly interested in the situation, or let's say the relationship that a quartet has with one another. And who does anyone want to speak to that? I mean, you are really one when you play, like an orchestra, of course, but much, much more intimate. Is there a leader? Is there someone that makes certain musical decisions?
I think it would be fair to say it's different with every quartet, because basically it's a relationship. And just like any relationship, it's defined, the dynamic is defined by what the individuals bring to the relationship. And so there are quartets probably that are dominated by a certain member of the group or a couple members of the group. Again, I think we are fostering an egalitarian approach and wanting to hear everybody's voice, everybody's ideas, everyone at the table, and maybe based in the philosophy of quartet playing that it really is a conversation, that the music itself is a conversation. And so our work process reflects the conversation that goes on in the music.
Music of Dmitri Shostakovich, we heard the Seraphim String Quartet perform the Allegretto from the first movement of his third quartet. Do you discuss presentation or interpretation amongst yourselves when you're playing?
All the time.
Endlessly.
Endlessly. On what level, though, say, Esme?
Well, first of all, I think another sort of philosophical principle we are always keeping in mind is that what's great and also a challenge about quartet playing is that it involves soloistic voices at the same time as an ensemble voice. And so we sound the best when each individual feels freest and most secure to play as soloists in many senses, as well as trying to blend with the other people.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's so very, very important, which is what you always hear about even in orchestras, that you have to blend the various instruments. And this is so exposed. I mean,
part, and you have to own every note and every sound.
And also make decisions, don't you? I mean, amongst the four of you, about how you want to perhaps, I don't know, express this or whatever this being.
Absolutely.
Know.
We can spend, you can give us a couple hours and we can fill it up talking about whether to play something on an up bow or a down bow. And we can. Those are all part, the technical decisions we make really interweave with the musical and presentation decisions and interpretation decisions we make.
Yeah, I think the bowing on all stringed instruments, there's always that discussion. I mean, even in orchestras, there's always that. So, but when you have a concertmaster, I guess he makes the decision. Is that right?
Usually in an orchestra setting, you'll have a principal player or the concertmaster, and sometimes a conductor even will make bowing decisions. But in a quartet, it might be dictated by a certain thing, say who has the melody at a certain part of the music. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that's the first violin, but certainly not always.
Of course.
And it does foster a lot of discussion, and we feel that what we do with our bows is really the a large part of how we're expressing the music. And so there are, as Esme put it, endless discussions about that.
Sometimes it comes down to, well, get out the quarter and we'll flip a coin.
As long as we don't have fisticuffs going on. So it's an old-fashioned word.
We don't know each other well enough yet, but that'll be down the road.
But no, I would imagine that it is really the epitome of working together. I mean, it's for the good of the good, right. You know.
Well, just to share an anecdote, at the University of Delaware, where we're in residence, I met a number of years ago one of the business professors who was actually using the string quartet as an example to her students of how to work together.
Right.
Because, again, the group works best when each individual person is empowered to give their fullest. And it's very rare that you also have an organization where people are constantly changing leadership roles. I mean, constantly within 30 seconds of music, you might change roles four different times between the leader, the melodic voice, the descant, the bass note, the harmonic rhythmic underpinner. There's all these different changes that we have to go through and still have some sort of functioning delegation of responsibilities.
Well, you have to agree also, I think, don't you? I mean, that which is always difficult in an interpretation, I would imagine.
You have to play with conviction. Yeah. And so you have to learn that even if it's not your first choice, you are going to give it your absolute best.
The greater good,
right,
I guess.
To, to the way the group has decided to play it.
I think the whole, but of course, poor Lisa, I mean, the poor second violin, it's always but you're certainly not. We can't live without you. So, and do you play first ever?
I play first about half the time.
Yeah, we actually trade equally.
Equally back and forth. And it's interesting because even if we're four equal voices on paper, we're always sort of juggling the balance of, you know, what we're listening for. And it's interesting because we have to take our own opinions into consideration as we're playing.
Right.
But then we also want to know what's coming across in the audience, you know, to the audience. And so, you know, sometimes we ask outside people to listen to us. Sometimes we ask, you know, it's very interesting when we record ourselves. That's a big part of our process these days. And if we're working with a recording engineer, they give us feedback, but also we can take our own, you know, listening experience and try and translate. So just balancing how we want our effect to come across is always.
Well, recording too can change the balance as well. I mean, you can say, I really want more of the second or more of the cello or something. Our next work today being performed by the Seraphin String Quartet is a work that was written by Jennifer Higdon in 1997. It was originally composed for the Da Vinci Quartet, and it was revised in 2000. It's called Sky Quartet, and she was so inspired by the beauty of the sky in the western part of the United States while she was actually in residence in Colorado. And so this really is a painting, a musical painting of the sky in various stages, the start of a day, the rapture of its blueness, a storm-wrenched fury, and its vast immensity. Here now, Jennifer Higdon's Sky Quartet, performed by our guests today, the Seraphin String Quartet. Thank you. music of Jennifer Higdon, we've just heard Sky Quartet, performed by our guests today, the Seraphin String Quartet. You have a new release.
Yes, we do.
It's quite exciting. Is it the Jennifer Higdon?
Yes, it is.
One of the great young, well, new composers. I love her work. She's a wonderful person, too, as well. Tell us a little bit about that. All of you, you can chime in.
Yeah, since I was involved in the project with a couple of new members, Kate and I were involved in this project, which we finished recording, I think, sometime last year, and it was released this summer. And it was a wonderful process. As you said, Jennifer is not just a fabulous composer who's doing incredible things and setting the world on fire. She's also just a delightful human being and a wonderful supporter. She was involved in hearing us and giving us ideas and notes on the pieces that we were playing. And this all started when there was a body of her work that had yet to be recorded, early chamber works.
Right.
And it seemed to be a good project. Her career was starting to take off. And when we decided to do this, and she agreed, and we were very fortunate to get to be working with Naxos Records as well for this project, right after this all got decided, within a month, I think she won both the Pulitzer Prize and a Grammy. And
not
we thought,
bad.
Well, this is nice timing for us,
yes,
for sure, to be in on this project. And it really has been just an incredible process and a wonderful learning experience for us. And we've really enjoyed connecting with these early pieces of hers, in which you can hear sort of the germs of what she has become as a more mature composer. And it's a really wonderful variation of works on the disc as well.
Well, she told me that she was a flutist. I mean, that's
right.
What she studied. So it's a wind instrument, which has absolutely nothing to do with strings. So I would imagine the concept, too, of producing sound is very, very different. And you look, of course, she doesn't think that way. She thinks in an orchestral sense, I believe. But as you say, she's done some marvelous things. So this is the Sky Quartet.
Sky Quartet. And when you hear Amazing Grace, you will know that Jennifer Higdon has command of string sound and that it derives from her concept of vocal choral sound. And so she really has a lovely sense about blend for the strings, and the pieces are very effective. We have actually learned some of the Sky Quartet and Amazing Grace with our two new members so that we can continue to play these works into the future. And we'll be playing a set of these works at UD this fall in a concert.
That's the University of Delaware for those who are listening in Japan. I mean, this actually is, we broadcast worldwide and now, of course, even on the internet. So we're very excited about that, and we're excited that people can hear you all over the world, literally. So this is it's a new release, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's you have the Amazing Grace and the Sky Quartet. What do you think was the reason for the title of that? Anyone have an opinion?
Well, actually, Jennifer wrote about that in the liner notes and talked to us a lot about it. It was inspired largely by her visits out west, the American West, and seeing the wonderful landscapes and the huge skies out there. And so,
which are, I think, really very exquisite.
They really are stunning. Yeah. And you can, in knowing that, in listening to the music, you can hear these different reflections, if you will, on the different views that one might see. The third movement of the work is called Fury, and you can certainly hear almost a violent thunderstorm approaching.
Well, it's a picturesque work, I suppose. I guess
one
would call
it. Definitely has almost programmatic quality to it. Definitely a lot of character.
So, have you had didn't you perform at the World Cafe just recently?
Yes, we did.
We were unfortunately unable to get to hear you there, but that was very successful, wasn't it?
That was our CD release party. With Jennifer was there to sign discs.
Terrific.
And we were.
Yeah.
And we also did a little season preview at the end of September.
So what is going to happen next? Now that you've done this, do you have anything on the horizon that you're looking forward to as far as recording is concerned? Or aren't you going to let the cat out of the bag?
There will definitely be future recording projects. And we are in discussion about what those are going to be. I don't think they're going to happen immediately because we're still acclimating to our new formation with Esme and Lisa both being new members of Seraphin String Quartet. And so we're kind of allowing ourselves some time to gel our sound and our style and amass some repertoire together. But right now we're very interested in developing our residency at the University of Delaware to do more activities on and off campus. So a lot of our energy
is
going
to that. Well, you just answered my next question, because it's wonderful to be in residence at a university, and Delaware does have a fine music department. So,
well, actually, I was wanting to mention a very personal connection I feel to this Higdon recording when you were talking about the program. Yes, the major inspiration for the, I guess, the programmatic side is the sky and depictions of different skies. But I mentioned to Jennifer Higdon at our CD release party, actually, that I feel a very special connection to this viola solo that appears in the second movement of the Sky Quartet that we played for her. And it's just this incredibly beautiful, quite uplifting melody, which is maybe not how viola melodies are usually characterized. But she told me when I said how special I felt this melody was, that it was actually a response at that time to the passing of her brother. And she was writing, and it, again, it's not a somber melody. It was, I guess, a way of finding some peace or...
She had that same, I think, reaction when she wrote the...
Blue Cathedral.
Yes, the Blue Cathedral. And she talked about that was... It was so... It hit her so deeply, and that was the inspiration for that. So I would imagine that doesn't go away for a long time.
And again, I remember when we were playing our dress rehearsal at the World Cafe, Jennifer was there. Or maybe it was a TV thing we were recording. But anyway... I mean, it's always funny, I guess, for her to revisit her older works when they come to life again as musicians play them in real time. But I can imagine how, especially with a piece like that, her thoughts would immediately go back to the reasons she had.
Yeah, it would be very profound, I would imagine. Yeah, very, very. Well, of course, that's what music is. I mean, even as an instrumentalist with no real emotional attachment to a piece of music, 10 years later you play it, and then 20 years later you play it and you say, it's different because you're different, you're mature, you've changed one way or another, good, bad, or indifferent, but it's so personal. It really is, and subtle. But I just want to thank you for coming and having just an exciting and wonderful interview. I wish we could speak. As a matter of fact, we will speak longer because we will certainly call you back and to cross over when you do your next release. Anything in the offing? Kate, do you have any idea, anything?
On the recording side?
Yeah.
Well, we're in discussions now to decide what we'd like our next recording project to be, and I think it'll probably be about 2 years before we pull that together. Uh-huh. We're also talking about getting back overseas to play.
Yes,
again.
I was just, you just answered, do you tour at all?
We do. We'll be in Florida later this year, and we've played different places throughout the United States, and we've been overseas once, but we'd like to... expand on all of that.
That's wonderful. And of course, a wonderful ensemble again, the Seraphin String Quartet. And we are tracking your progress. And it is just a joy to listen to this wonderful new album. And please come back again.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The traditional hymn Amazing Grace, arranged by Jennifer Higdon, and a performance by the Seraphim String Quartet. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group, Incorporated. Thanks for listening.